I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org.
I had an institutional responsibility as dean of the law school trying to defend an anti-discrimination policy.
Would it apply to the Catholic Church if they wanted to come and recruit lawyers from the law school because they don't have women priests?
Well, the way we enforce this policy is if an employer comes, we give the employer a form. And the form basically says, I will not discriminate on the basis of. And then it says something like race and creed and gender and sexual orientation and actually veteran status as well. Okay. And if the employer signs the form, the employer can get the services of the Office of Career Services. And if not, not.
That's Elena Kagan, a nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States, being questioned late last week by Senator Lindsey Graham, talking about her time as dean of Harvard Law and an incident that occurred there that Colleen Carroll Campbell will explain to us in just a moment. It sounds like she's saying that the speech codes at Harvard Law and the anti-discrimination policies at Harvard Law might somehow trump the First Amendment. That's an odd thing for a Supreme Court nominee to say. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, July the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Colleen Carroll Campbell about Elena Kagan and the First Amendment, we'll get your reaction to what Dr. Richard Land had to say recently. He's of the Southern Baptist Convention. He was talking about immigration reform, giving advice to what he hopes will be a new governing coalition of social conservatives. He says they need to change their mind on immigration reform. We'll play it for you, and then we'll get your reaction. Audio open lines in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at IssuesETC or visit our Facebook fan page and chime in on Dr. Richard Land and his suggestions for immigration reform. Facebook.com/IssuesETC. Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a weekly television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome.
Hi, Todd.
What did you hear in Elena Kagan's Supreme Court nominee hearings before the Senate that gave you pause with regard to the First Amendment?
It was Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. He was asking her about the military's don't ask, don't tell policy, which she believed was a violation of the Harvard campus anti-discrimination policy that covers sexual orientation, and therefore she had not let military recruiters on the Harvard Law School campus to recruit. Kagan gave not much of a response at all. Essentially, she dodged the question. She simply reiterated Harvard's policy. Said, well, it covers race, creed, gender, sexual orientation, and veteran status. If recruiters agreed to abide by that policy, they're in, and if not, not. And that's all she said. Now, unfortunately, Senator Graham didn't follow up on it, but what he should have done is pressed her a little harder, because what we have there is a pretty fundamental conflict between First Amendment rights, including freedom of religion, and a non-discrimination policy that, by covering such things as sexual orientation and then applying them in the way that Kagan did at Harvard, could really be a problem for religious groups. And the reason I think this is an interesting case and something we need to pay more attention to is that this is the kind of case that is, in fact, appearing more often on dockets around the country. And recently, the Supreme Court ruled on a case very similar to the hypothetical that Lindsey Graham proposed.
Tell us about that case.
Well, it was a case of Hastings College of Law, which is a University of California law school. And the law school had a policy very similar to the one that Kagan championed at Harvard, which rejected any form of discrimination, including on grounds of sexual orientation. So there was a Christian Legal Society. That's the name of the group. It's a national group. They have a founding religious statement of faith, just kind of your basic evangelical Christian statement of faith, includes a statement on, you know, traditional biblical sexual morality, which, of course, does not sanction homosexual relationships. And the law school said, if you want to be an officially recognized student group here at the law school, you have to accept leaders who openly reject your statement of faith, because that statement of faith, they said, does not conform to the campus non-discrimination policy. Well, the Christian student group sued, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And last month, the court ruled by a very narrow majority, led by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who authored the decision, ruled that the school could do what they in fact did, which is deprive this campus group of official recognition because they wouldn't accept leaders that rejected their statement of faith. Justice Samuel Alito wrote a very persuasive rebuttal, and his dissent on this decision, he said that he saw it as a serious setback for freedom of expression in this country, and said we should be very frightened because it arms public educational institutions with what he called a handy weapon for suppressing the speech of unpopular groups. And unfortunately, as we know today, groups that champion biblical morality on teachings of human sexuality are, in fact, unpopular groups on many college campuses. So this is a frightening thing that the Supreme Court already ruled, and I think we should also be frightened that the woman who looks poised to become our next Supreme Court justice is very much in line with this misguided way of thinking.
So kind of zoom out, if you would, to the broader cultural and social context. How is it that campus speech codes, essentially, and it sounds like now belief codes too, how do they trump the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution?
Well, they shouldn't be, but I think what we've got here are basically political correctness run amok, and a sense now that because sexual orientation, and this is not all of these cases are about that, but that's kind of a flashpoint in this whole debate, and it's becoming an issue, too, with same-sex marriage, where religious liberty and same-sex marriage are basically on a collision course here. By defining sexual orientation and including it under these non-discrimination policies, you're basically saying that a certain lifestyle and certain sexual practices are now protected the same way, for instance, race would be, and therefore anyone who objects to them, rather than saying, well, that's your belief and I disagree with it, what these campus administrators are saying is you don't have no place on this campus if you disagree with homosexual lifestyle and homosexual relationships. How we got to this place is, I think, probably more than we have time for, but the bottom line, I think, is that we have focused so much on just this idea of relativism. You know, there is no truth. It's just your opinion versus mine. We can't hurt anyone's feelings. We can't exclude anyone. No one wants to be excluded. No one wants their feelings hurt. But we're getting to a point now where we really are so concerned about those things that we're not willing to stand up for our own freedoms of speech, religion, and assembly, and we're not willing to stand up for those of other people, especially those with whom we disagree. And so for a short-term gain in the culture wars, I think secular liberals are forfeiting a longer-term, they're accepting a long-term loss in terms of freedom that's going to impact everyone on the left, right, and anywhere in between. Because when we start saying, I don't want to even hear you express an opinion or organize a group rallying around a belief that I don't agree with, if it's not a belief we all agree is a good one, we don't even want it on our campus and in our public square, what we're saying is we prize this politically correct code over our fundamental rights of free worship, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and freedom of assembly. And this is really, it's a pathway toward totalitarianism, basically. I mean, that sounds very dramatic, but actually that's what we're creeping toward, I think, in this country. And we already see overseas that these things have gotten more and more pronounced. and freedom is more and more infringed upon in other countries, basically following this same track of thought.
Finally, then, with about a minute and a half, Colleen, we're right in the middle of the summer. A whole crop of high school graduates are all preparing to head out, many of them, to the campuses of universities, colleges all over the country with the beginning of a new academic year. And the parents of those kids are thinking, in the best of all possible worlds, my kid's going to a place where they're going to learn to think for themselves. They're going to be able to enter a marketplace of open ideas and open debate. And they're going to come out at the other end 4 years later smarter, better prepared to think and better prepared to express themselves. Is that necessarily true?
No, unfortunately, it's not. And I would say that's more the exception than the rule these days in terms of the kind of ideas they're going to be exposed to. On certain questions, yeah, they're going to hear a great, lively debate. But when it comes to the most heated cultural debates in this country, unfortunately, college campuses are not places where you're going to see a lively civil debate on those issues. You're going to see basically unpopular ideas, and you can equate that basically with biblical morality on a lot of these teachings, shut down and no debate at all. And we're seeing this all over the country, and the best I can say is that parents need to prepare their kids before they head off to that campus and prepare them to be outspoken and to fight for their rights to speak up and defend their beliefs and to defend the beliefs of others with whom they disagree in the sense of defending their right to speak out. We have the right to be wrong in this country, and people with whom I disagree have the right to loudly proclaim why I'm wrong, and I want them to have that right. And as soon as we start capitulating to these speech codes on the campus, we're going to pretty soon see them covering all of American public life, not simply life on our campuses.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a weekly television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful. And she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thank you, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
By the way, something that Senator Lindsey Graham did ask Elena Kagan about, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it, was Roe v. Wade. And tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Robert George of Princeton University about where Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan stands on abortion and also same-sex marriage. When we come back, I want your reaction to what Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention is suggesting for immigration reform. We'll hear what he has to say, and then I want your reaction. It's Audio Open Lines live this Thursday afternoon, July the 8th, right after this.
I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison. cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen on Demand.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.